Welcome, Sega fans, to the Sega Guys podcast, where we celebrate some of the greatest games to ever hit Sega hardware and a few other consoles as well. I'm Dan the Mega Driver, joined by my host and friend, the dead or alive to my Ninja Gaiden. It's James the Segaholic. Mike, how you doing?
I'm very good, mate. Very good. Well, apart from your sore knee, apart from that, I'm doing very well. Very well, mate.
Not too bad. Did you play footy again tonight?
Not tonight, mate. No, I was at the time of recording, it's Halloween, so tonight was always going to be off because of the trick-or-treating requirements. Taking the kids out around the doors and whatnot. Our street's a bit like Hollywood. It's like other areas send minibuses full of kids up here. It's not even funny. It's like you get people coming from far and wide because there's umpteen hussies that just go crazy.
Yeah.
So it's like the Hollywood strip up here. So, aye. But no, I get back into it last week. It was my wife had sent me a post from Reddit about local football games, basically being held at various football 5-a-side, 7-a-side, 8-a-side, 11-a-side places across Glasgow, and you sign up and you just basically download this app and choose, you know, where you want to play and when, and if there's a space, and you just slot in and off you go. So I kind of, you know, messaged a guy and get back in it, and my first game back in goals last week. Can still do it, mate. Can still do it. Was making the saves, was denying people, was hearing those wonderful words. Fucking save, goalie. It's like, can't you beat it, mate, honestly. Obviously. And I was like, I'm back. 46 years old, I'm back. Here we go. But unfortunately, I've had a kind of dodgy left knee for a while, and it's all because my first car, when I passed my test almost 3 years ago, was a Corsa, and after about a year of owning it, I'd picked my daughter up for school. This is a tangent, I have to start the video game podcast, by the way, but I'd picked my daughter up for school, and I was having to pick the neighbour and their two kids up, so try to fit five people in a Corsa, right? Yeah. So I put my seat forward to give people behind me leg room, and I've drove cramped, and ever since then my left knee's kind of been sore, and any kind of exertion on it, you know, it bulges up and it's quite painful and kind of stabbing pains down the right hand side. And as like that, whenever, the 2 days after playing, man, it was just like it just went up like a balloon, and it was agony. It's still sore just now, so I've bit the bullet. I've used the works private healthcare, and I've got an appointment next week with a specialist. They've signed off, the insurance signed off on an MRI to get it looked at, because I need to get back between the sticks, mate. I need to be denying people and making say, I just bought two new pairs of goalie gloves, mate, so I'm going to get used to them. I'm no good. Try to see if they were actually here. They were here. Where we go? They big Max. Look at him. Pair of white Jack Butland gloves. You know what I mean? So people will be saying Jack Butland, you know, drops the ball quite often. So saved a penalty the other night. Oh. But anyway, so that's that, mate. That's what I've been up to. Back into football. Bit of trick or treating tonight, and then obviously nursing the dodgy knee, which will hopefully get fixed. So not much time for video games, unfortunately.
Yeah, I've been trick or treating tonight as well. With the youngest, the other two are too old. The middle one went to a friend's house. The eldest, he has spent the day at the horses, which is kind of like, yeah, it's his favourite thing at the moment. He's going with his mates to the horses. Which is kind of like trick or treat. See, he won a couple, and he was got.
Did he win anything? Eh?
Yeah, he was doubled his money after two races, and then lost it all.
Oh, you should have learned when to walk away. A valuable life lesson.
Yeah, he loves it though. He's like, "Can we all go? Can we all go?" It's his 18th birthday soon. He wants to do skydiving, so he's got that as well to come.
Are you going with him?
Absolutely not. I was upstairs down Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and they had to basically boot me off. There's like, you got to let go, and eventually he just put a big boot on me. Just I was It's clinging for my life, going down there at the slowest. I can see him at the corner of my eye. He's swinging around like Tarzan, abseiling, kicking himself off the side.
Oh, brilliant, mate. I just gotta say, imagine that, get a GoPro, jump out the plane. See you on the
Yeah, not for me. No,
Sega.
I'll be on the ground watching him come down.
Binoculars, that's it, son. You're doing well. That's it.
Yeah. But yeah, not been up to much outside of that. Been playing started the House of the Dead video that went out. It's nice to play through those three games. And then been playing a bit of the Outer Worlds 2. Finished Stalker 2, which I love that game because it's like a game from out of time from the 2000s. Doesn't feel like a modern game. It's janky and fast travel is really restricted and it's just merciless. So love that. But yeah, aside from that, it's just cracking on, mate. But looking forward to talk about this one because we're talking about a legend that we lost recently. Tomonobu Itagaki, born April 1st, 1967, unfortunately passed away on October 16th of this year. Aged just 58, which
58, wow.
really is no age at all. But really was, he had a good affiliation with Sega and Sega hardware. Really good relationship when Sega were making consoles. Remembered as much for his Xbox work, maybe remembered a little bit more for his Xbox work, if we're being honest. But very outspoken and kind of, mate, I feel like he was just one of the last rockstar developers of the gaming industry. Wouldn't you say?
Aye, mate, it was one of a kind. I think Rockstar sums him up. The image he always had was, the leather jacket, the long hair, the shades, even if he was indoors, with a maybe cigarette, smoking away, just looked so cool. Like, they look like a game developer, like, as you say, like a rock star. And I think what you associate him with, I think it depends on a wee bit in kind of your age. I think for us, because we've seen the kind of the start, from, let's say, Tecmo being saved for Dead or Alive, and then watching Naomi with Dead or Alive 2, and then moving on to the OG Xbox, and we'll go through these games, wonderful, wonderful games. But I mean, for me, I still think about like the start of the Dreamcast part of it, but then DOA 3, it's just the intro to that is ingrained in my brain, like Nine Lives by Aerosmith, that tune. And ahead of doing this show, I've added to my Spotify playlist. I've been blaring it in the school run in the car. It's like absolutely incredible, but a massive loss, as we said, only 58 years old. No kind of cause of death has been announced, and you don't want to kind of speculate or get into that kind of thing anyway. That's private material for that's his family's business. But it was telling in his statement as well that one of the things that he said, the statement that he left to get put out, whenever he did pass away, if you're reading this and I'm no longer of this earth, is that one of his biggest regrets is that he would no longer be able to do games for his fans. It's like for that's you on your deathbed, and that's one of your biggest regrets. He was that rock star developer until the very end. By 58 years old, I think. Whenever, again, you're our age, I'm 46. Like, 58's only round the corner for me. It's terrifying to think, he's no longer with us. But what a body of work he's left behind for us to enjoy.
Yeah, and a pioneer, and one word that I always use to describe him, and we'll get into kind of personality and everything, but is unapologetic. He was
Why?
forthright. He spoke with his heart on his sleeve, and he was brutally honest in every single way. And he was something of a genius. The way that he, in and out of game design, he had a vision, and he saw those visions, especially with his early work. We won't talk about Devil's Third too much. I've not played that game too much, and what happened post Tecmo is, and even at the end of his Tecmo career was quite unfair to him, to be honest. But when he was at Tecmo, what he did both within the game and then to promote the game, this guy lived and breathed what he did and was something of a genius, not just because of the games that he created, but because of the way that he got them into the public eye, and we'll get into, the first Dead or Alive in due course, but brought a company which had a storied history but was basically on its last legs, was about to see bankruptcy. And turn them into pretty much the prime third party developer for Xbox for a period. So, that and that meteoric rise happened over a span of what, like 5 or 6 years, all under Itagaki's his stewardship. So, an incredible body of work, incredible achievement, and yeah, looking forward to talking about the games, mate. Is where there'll be, as we said, will be some on Sega. And some rest will probably be Xbox, but as you say, mate, incredible body of work, and I'm looking forward to talking about some of his best hits.
Aye, absolutely, mate. And there are many of them.
Yes,
Many, many
yes,
of them.
yes. I've got a handful of them. Won't be able to talk in depth about all of them, but I've got a handful. My one's down there. So if you watch it on YouTube, then I'll show them off as they come up. But yeah, I think where else to start, mate, but Dead or Alive. Obviously before that he was a graphics programmer. Two games that I haven't played. So he started off in, I think it was 1993, kind of understudied some of the techno greats that worked on games like Ninja Gaiden. His first game was Captain Tsubasa 4. That's an anime that do you know what, mate? I've only watched that anime in French. Where it's called Olive et Tom. I don't know if you've ever heard of it at all, have you?
I have not, mate, but I'm looking at pictures here and it looks like it's a kind of football.
It's a football anime. And
Yeah.
yeah, when we went to Tenerife in 2002, my mates, whenever we got up in the morning before we, or, yeah, well, before we went down to the pool, it would be on the telly, but on the French channel, and we'd end up watching it. We'd have no idea what's going on, but we, it's anime football on the telly, so
I mean, 93. I mean, would that, how close to the Hurricanes would that have been?
well, Captain Tsubasa was out years before the Hurricanes.
Aye.
That's like the fourth game in the series, and the manga went on for ages before that, so. Yeah, it would have predated
I
the
remember that one. Jeez.
Hurricanes. Yeah. So yeah, well, obviously a big license to pick up, and then Tecmo Super Bowl. I've not played that either. I played Tecmo Bowl on the NES Mini, but not played the Super Bowl. But another well thought of thing. But obviously, his big break came with Dead or Alive, and Tecmo, who were they'd had 3 consecutive year annual losses at the time. They were
Yep.
literally staring down the barrel and said, "Well, what can we do?" Itagaki suggested a fighting game. Details aren't clear. I'm not sure if you know, mate, how you ended up working on the Model 2 board. Was it him who approached Sega? I mean, Sega did license it out to other companies, but.
Yeah, so basically, the idea was is that it was pitched to Itagaki that could he create either a fighting game or a racing game? And from what I've been able to see online, because I'm working on a video to kind of go with this podcast, is that it was unveiled, Dead or Alive was unveiled at, it was the Amusement Machine Expo in 96, and it was at that show where Sega announced that Model 2 could be licensed out to third
Oh,
parties.
okay.
But it was also the Jellicoe Racer that was
That's
also
right.
the other game that was
GT24.
aye. That was also one of the games that was announced. So Jellicoe and Tecmo were kind of announced as the first two kind of third parties to use Model 2. So Dead or Alive was one of them. Now I can't say anything about when the agreement took place, how the talks were done to get it, over the line that they would use it, but aye, Tecmo had been basically staring down the barrel, 3 consecutive losses, as you say, mate. And whenever, I'm just going to bring it up here because I've got tons of stuff written down here for kind of stats and whatnot, but figures and whatnot. By was mid 95, after heavily investing in the wrong genres and 3 years of successive losses. That the year before Dead or Alive, the loss in 95 was 490 million yen or $5.2 million. So that was 95's loss. And you know, they needed Dead or Alive, they needed it fast. And in the year of 1996 alone, Dead or Alive helped Tecmo to profits of 970 million yen or $9.2 million, thus saving the company. So it almost, you know, and a kick in the ass off of doubling in terms of profit what they'd made the previous year in losses. You know what I mean? What a turnaround. I don't think there's any other kind of video game business turnaround of that magnitude in 12 months. You know, that's just absolutely crazy. But, you know, it was his idea was to obviously lean into, you know, Virtua Fighter. And he was a massive fan of Virtua Fighter, as most developers were back then, you know, with the impact that it had. But he was smart enough to know that just simply copying Virtua Fighter wouldn't be enough. So he wanted to bring attitude, speed, and, you know, not just that, but violence and, you know, sex appeal, which in the mid-90s, it was a big selling point. You know, you think about Lads Magazine, whatever your opinions of them are now. In the mid-90s, they were kind of all their age. And I think the thing with Dead or Alive as well is that people wrongly go, it's a game with the bouncing boobs, right? Now, that just betrays. I think as time has passed, people have given it more respect, especially as more later games have kind of come out. But at the time, that's what people kind of went to. They went straight to the fact that it was a novelty fighting game.
Yeah.
You know, but it wasn't. I mean, he brought in the hold and the counter system as well, which Virtua Fighter doesn't have. You know, VF2's got throws and holds, but there's not the counter system, you know, which is absolutely brilliant. Yeah. If you just time whenever you press block and hold back, then, you know, like Kasumi's got the one where she'll grab the wrist and flip them over. And, you know, if you look at the ones in DOA 2, where she'll grab them and she'll put them up in the air. And if you time it right as they come down, you can juggle them for a 5 or 6 hit combo as well. So he brought that in and just, again, doing things that hadn't been done in the 3D fighting space. I mean, Tekken wasn't doing that. Toshinden sure as hell wasn't doing that. And even the mighty Virtua Fighter 2 wasn't doing that. So it did enough to stand on its own. And that's probably why it made the profits that it did. Just on the back of the fact it was so different in terms of attitude, style, and gameplay to VF2 that it wasn't as if like VF2 kind of cannibalized into kind of Dead or Alive's market. It existed rightly alongside it. Phenomenal game.
It really is, and you know, credit to him because he basically did what Fighting Vipers set out to achieve, but seemed to succeed on a greater scale. And it really was because he had that initial hook. The initial hook was the ladies. You know, every time you read a preview, it talked about the jiggle physics. And that's kind of, you know, young lad. The culture at the time. I was listening to an Arcade Attack podcast this morning, actually, and they're talking about they're going for what I think Dylan was picking up a magazine, and he said, "Oh yeah, if you turn to the second page, first thing you see is a great big picture." He said, "Oh, a typical 90s magazine." He goes, "Open the first page. First thing I see is Kasumi laying down in a bikini," and that was the hook. That was you know, Itagaki, he knew his audience, but then. You know, all sorts of games have tried it so many times, you know, with the sex appeal. But the difference with DOA was that it was actually a fantastic game. So once you were brought in with the jiggles, once you got your hands on the game itself, you realized that it was actually a fantastic playing game because, as you were saying, the hold, the catch, the counter, the whole catch counter system, you know, the closest was basically Virtua Fighter 2 had those counter moves, but it like you could only do them with certain characters. Like Pai's counter move is like you hold block and you do diagonal down and forward just as the punch lands, and it's like, look, I've never been able to do them.
She grabs the wrist, you know, she does that and she ring out. She it's an absolute bastard, by the way. She gets me every time. She just goes, and then grabs your wrist and goes phew, and flicks you. Like, brilliant. Cheers, pal.
But good luck. Good luck doing that one yourself when you're actually playing it. The CPU does it all the time. But yeah, that's the beauty of DOA. It's that, it was all about timing. It was fast. It was furious. As I say, Fighting Vipers was, but it had that attitude at the same time. It was accessible. It was appealing. So in that first year, like you say, the success that that arcade game brought, and then the home brought as well, just revitalized Tecmo, and Tecmo is still going today. I mean, they're not quite the same, and we'll probably get onto that a little bit later. But the brand's still going today. They're still making games, so it was great to see. It's great to see that that game came out, and obviously from there we got the Sega Saturn port, because he really had he had that connection with Sega, and basically Virtua Fighter 2 was the template for bringing Dead or Alive to console.
And don't forget as well, mate, the other aspect of DOA, danger zones. You know what I mean?
It's often forgot about when you play it, because I was playing it earlier, and it's especially when you get a KO and they're in the danger zone and they get blown up about 40 feet
Aye.
into the air.
And they spin, it's like it's absolutely brilliant. Aye. And again, just adding another element, that if you're in the right place, juggle the combo, hit them in the air. Even that you follow them up, you can just let them hit the danger zone and let that take care of the rest. It's again doing things, completely different. Enough of a differentiation in style and gameplay that it could stand on its own. But I mean the Saturn version, like you were saying, mate, so it pretty much is using Virtua Fighter 2's blueprint. It runs in the high resolution mode. Runs at 60 FPS, just like Virtua Fighter 2, it uses Garoud shading to make up for Saturn's, lack of, polygons. It uses that shading to kind of trick you into thinking there's more going on there than there actually is, that extra level of detail. Dead or Alive on Saturn uses that as well. What Dead or Alive, I think, on Saturn does better than VF2 is the backgrounds. I think the backgrounds in DOA on Saturn absolutely destroy VF2. It's just they're so detailed. They've got so much depth to them as well. Some of the lighting effects on some of the stages is absolutely phenomenal. But I mean, 97, it came out on Saturn. Japan exclusive was meant to come out here, was cancelled. Don't know if that was Bernie Stoller. Didn't quite meet his 5-point plan. But in Japan there was an initial run of 92,000 units, which sold out on the day of launch. But DOA went on to sell over 161,000 copies on Saturn. And Sega Saturn magazine did review it late on in its life, and it was given a very respectable 94%, and was one of the games that Rich would often promote as a reason to get your Saturn chipped, because we weren't going to get it over here. But basically that's it. Tecmo, via Agaki, they leveraged Sega's home and arcade hardware to bring this game to the masses. And the profits speak for itself, mate. 9.2 million, in a space of a year. Just saved the company. Unbelievable.
And I think it was the tipping point for Rich Ledbetter at the time, actually, was the cancellation of DOA. I think it was actually a reading just now that Acclaim were actually penciled in to bring the port over, and it was them that cancelled it because of the poor performance of the Saturn in the West, which is galling. But yeah, I've got my Japanese copy. It's had it for a while. It's quite battered now. But yeah, absolutely cracking game. No disconnect, because I've actually been playing it tonight. But yeah,
Well, my
it's always
copy
good.
is, mate.
It's on the way.
It's on the way because Tom Thumb, before we recorded this, has secured me a copy for £4.92. Japanese auction sites, baby. Can't beat them.
But then obviously there was an N64 port planned. It didn't come
Yes.
out. I mean, N64 fighters are I don't think it would have performed well on the N64. given how other games play on there. You had the PlayStation port, which eventually turned into an arcade game itself based on PlayStation hardware, and that was quite different. I don't think Itakagi had anything to do with that one at all, and I think he kind of disavows it as not being true to it. So we're ignoring that one. He had that.
It's fondness. I'm not mincing my words. It's shite. It's like it's an absolute abomination, and it irks me whenever people bring it up as a version, just because it came out over here. It's basically because the PlayStation couldn't do quads, so essentially to get a decent version running, it's based on this Dead or Alive +++, which is essentially a Sony JAMA board.
Yeah,
it's called +++ because it's programmed in C. That's where the +++
right, that's where it is. I didn't know that.
That's what it is. And it's mince. It's like the backgrounds are so stripped back. It's unbelievable. The fighters are a bit bigger. They look a bit smoother, but they also look less detailed.
Yeah.
The
lighting makes them look really anemic.
Aye. And the danger zones don't have as much detail. They're just kind of like flat areas. It's just mince. It's just, again, like... No.
Yeah, I mean that was 98. I mean, obviously, as I say, Itakagi didn't have much to do with that one. I think he disavowed it later, but obviously he was working on the powerhouse that would be Dead or Alive 2. And I think we've talked before, you know, made for the Naomi board, came out in 99, ported to the Dreamcast a little bit later, came in 2000. And we've talked before about what's the best looking fighting game. And, you know, over the years, I think it is Dead or Alive 2 that is better looking than Soul Calibur. An absolutely gorgeous game. The scale, the scope of the environments, you know, the interactiveness between them. You know, when you boot someone through one of the interactive areas, and like you know, when you kick them through the window and then you dive after them and then you end up brawling down below. Absolutely phenomenal. And obviously you had the tag mode in there as well, you know, where quite clever how that managed to, you know, I think that it must have arrived before Tekken Tag did, you know, where you've got four characters in a match. Absolutely phenomenal, mate. And is that one of your favourites as well, isn't it?
Oh, I mean, I think with Soul Calibur, the difference is it already existed as the arcade machine, and then essentially Namco kind of redone it. Whereas DOA2 is running on like cutting edge arcade hardware. And again, you know, Dreamcast games from Naomi, we know the family heritage that those two, you know, systems have got. Obviously, Naomi's get a bit more VRAM, a bit more system RAM, but for by and large, when games are brought to Dreamcast, are now identical, and everything about the Dreamcast version, like if you play it just now, like on like a modern TV and you upscale it, and you don't have any kind of like smoothing or scaler effects on, if you're not playing it on a CRT, then like it doesn't quite have the same look. But see DOA 2 on Dreamcast on a CRT through an RGB SCART, it's absolute butter. It like, just looks fucking incredible. Like it's so good. Like the level of detail, the facial expressions, the outfits, the characters wear the multiples of them, the stages, the level of detail in the background. Like, don't forget, like Soul Calibur has 3D elements, but there's a lot of 2D stuff going on in Soul Calibur's backgrounds. DOA 2 is 3D. Okay, there's some maybe skyboxes that are 2D in the distance, or some maybe environmental stuff way in the distance if you're in an arena that's up high. But some of the set pieces, mate, there's like the temple one on the rooftop, and there's those little kind of brown wooden crosshatch windows. And I still remember the first time I smacked somebody against that wall and they went through that window and then they fall down and there's a big golden dragon head and there's the big cauldrons, the flames are going and the place is glowing in this golden flame and you're still beating the shit out of each other and amongst this. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it's absolutely visually spectacular game. You know, if they put that game on adverts, you know, somehow. Obviously, it was in all the magazines, but you know, people saw that game on telly. You know, It was the best looking fighting game, quite possibly the best looking game around at the time. You know, Tekken Tag was just around the corner. It beat the arse of Tekken Tag with its flat static backgrounds, and it had some animation in it, didn't it? But Tekken Tag looked so wooden. Obviously, talking about Tekken versus DOA, we'll probably get into that in a bit. But it looks phenomenal on Dreamcast. Came to PS2 again. Itagaki, not happy with how that was kind of rushed without much of his input. I think he did want it to be better than it turned out to be.
I
The PS2 version was the first version that I owned.
oof.
It's a fine version, but then you get the Dreamcast version, and you'd be like, oh yeah, this is a sack of shit.
It's the story that gets told that's wrong is that Gaki didn't want it on PS2. That's not right. It's like it was coming to PS2, but it was a marketing director, I believe, had essentially smuggled a copy, an incomplete copy, against Igaki's wishes, and it somehow was the one that get put into print, and that's what we got. So I think at that time he probably would have, with time, have smoothed out the jaggies, you know, because that's the worst thing about it. I mean, funny story, I remember I was working in Safeway, right? Well, I was a student at the time, and in the Safeway I worked in, and maybe Stiff being for Glasgow might recognize this, what I'm talking about. Safeway in Anniesland, right? And in the retail park right across the road, there used to be a Currys, right? So back in those days, you got your pay. It was a wee brown envelope waiting in a staff room for you. So you went in and you got your wages. And I used to work at night time, also after kind of college. And I'd basically go in, and this was at the point I was like buying anything that came out in PS2 to try and justify the fact that I'd bought one. Why isn't it as good as they said it would be? What are these lies? Sony, you said it would do Toy Story in real time. What's happening here? And I took my wee brown envelope and my wages and staggered over to Currys on my break. Oh, DOA 2, hardcore. Well, fucking why not? I had it on Dreamcast at the time. Well, why not? Why not? Just it's a new PS2 game. Let's have a look. And I remember getting it home and I tried it on the PS2. Like the other night, they're just taking a, because I've got it on the mem card pro that's in the PS2, and it not only looks different, it feels different. It's the weight of the characters, the responsiveness of the moves just isn't there. It doesn't feel the same as the Dreamcast version. The Dreamcast version, I feel like my go-to characters are like Kasumi. I go, so like I like to always start with a kind of nice punch, 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 kick combo. And like on the PS2 version, for some reason, if you're pressing the punch and it's triangle, it almost looks as if like midway through the second one, she kind of grinds to a halt and then remembers to punch the third time. It's like there's some weird kind of timing issues that I feel on the PS2 version. The lighting effects on the PS2 version are nice, but they're very PS2 looking. You know what I mean by that? It's like PS2 lighting effects have got a very stylized look about them. DOA 2 has definitely got those, but it's just those jaggies, mate. It's absolutely horrendous.
Especially on a modern display as well. If you haven't got any kind
Oh.
of filtering solution to get rid of them, it looks poor, which is a shame. But yeah, obviously the Dreamcast port, fantastic. Obviously, probably skipping ahead, but both games came to the Xbox as, enhanced versions, DOA Ultimate. Used the Sega Saturn version, I believe, in order to as the base for DOA Ultimate 1.
Aye.
And obviously DOA Ultimate 2 was based on, the Naomi Dreamcast version. Both, great versions to play. But yeah, classic games, mate, that really kept Tecmo going. And Itagaki from there was kind of working on multiple games at once. Obviously, there was going to be a third DOA inevitably, given the success of the prior two, and that ended up being it was a launch title on the Microsoft Xbox, wasn't it? And I do remember seeing at the time, Halo was the thing that people were looking at. But then I remember, you look at Halo's graphics, Halo was more about the scale and the scope.
Aye.
And some of, I remember looking at the textures on kind of the Halo stage, the second stage, and looking at the grass, and I look at all of how detailed that grass is. But really, it was, you looked at DOA 3, and I remember there was like a steal on, I think it might have been the GameSpot website or something, and me and my mate were looking into it, going, you can see the ringlets on Ryu Hayabusa's alternative costume. I mean, how detailed is that? And I was just like, wow, this feels like this really is a step above. And was it one of those ones that you got on launch for
Was
your?
me, I, and the reason why I plumped for it, because I remember whenever I bought the OG Xbox, and it was Halo, PGR, and DOA 3 that I picked as my three games. It was
Cracking
like,
trio of games there as
mate,
well.
honestly, God, man, you're set for weeks, months with that A3. You know what I mean? This what a launch lineup. I mean, people talk about the Dreamcast launch lineup, which was phenomenal in the West, right? But the OG Xbox. You Jet Set Radio Future in there as well, for God's sake, you know what I mean? But I remember seeing DOA on a demo pod a few weeks before the launch, and it was in the Virgin Megastore at the top of Buchanan Street in Glasgow, and I was with Sam at the time, and that was the same. I remember I was watching, and I was like, I mean, at that point, Soul Calibur and like DOA or DOA 2 on Dreamcast had already blew our minds, but you're like, the level of fucking detail on this, look at these environments, and it's like, yeah, that was that's what kind of no, I'm getting that as one in my games. I'm getting, but that was the first game I played in OG Xbox as well when I got home. That's the first one I loaded up, I which is why that whole Nine Lives by Aerosmith, that
Oh, really?
it starts with that brown that the kind of he's playing like the kind of riff in the guitar that's meant to mimic like cats meowing, and it starts like that. And then yourself is the way the intro starts, it's got that going as the camera pans across the scene, and it goes and then the fighters all start punching the shit out of each other. It's like, and it just gets you going, man. It's like, and again, it's that whole rock star thing into it. It's like he just and Agaki was. He was massive on, like, he loved the OG Xbox as well. He was a massive, massive champion of it at a time whenever a lot of Japanese developers, even consumers, were shunning it, but he fully embraced it. And man, DOA 3. We spoke about DOA 2's, like, environments. Mate, the one that always blew my mind in DOA 3 is whenever you're kind of fighting, it's like up in a kind of skyscraper building and you smack someone at the glass window and they hit the neon sign, and on the way down it smashes every bulb, and it's like, and like this flash of color is that every bulb's getting destroyed, and then you land in this dirty back alley kind of street, and it's been pishing the rain, and the ground's reflective, and there's puddles, and there's still other neon lights on the other side of the street, and they're reflecting in the light, and you're like, look at these graphics, it's not going to get better than this. How is this happening? It's like, it's phenomenal.
I do remember that sequence. But I got my DOA 3 pretty late. Admittedly, it's the one that I've played the least, to be honest. So you've got more experience with that than I have. But yeah, where do you rank that with the other two, or what are your thoughts on it as a game?
2-3-1. I'll go the original trilogy. I go 2-3-1. Which people might think is unfair on the first game. It's not to say the first game's bad. First game's phenomenal, as I've said, but I just think two, I think at the time for the step up, it was visually at that time to have again a Dreamcast game, arcade game that was like your Naomi Dreamcast partnership, to have those games nigh on identical was phenomenal. And then three just took that scale and kind of ramped it up. But I think just because the kind of Sega, aspect of, I think two, just two. I think one may have ranked higher. Like I did import one like back in the day, but it was after I got Dreamcast, whenever the bug kind of hit for importing. So I went back and started getting Saturn stuff. So it was, oh, I finally got that game that Rich Ledbetter was talking about. Woohoo. But at that point, again, whenever you're that age, and you're kind of late teens, getting into early 20s, you're a tech kind of junkie, so you're looking for the next big thing, you know. So at that point, my appreciation for DOA1 wasn't quite what it is now, you know, being older and looking back and being more appreciative. But aye, 2-2-3-1, mate, for the original trilogy.
Yeah, I've got them up to. I think I've got a version of five. I've got them all. Obviously, Itagaki didn't work on five, but yeah, I've got the but f it, I've played one and two are the ones that I've played the most. I played four a bit, but yeah, three almost passed me by. Apart from seeing it in the in the screenshots, thinking, oh, that looks amazing. I didn't actually play it until later on. But I don't think it got an arcade release, that it came straight to Xbox, this one, because
Aye.
this one was always there was never any tension to bring it to Sega hardware. It was basically, I think Microsoft saw it and was just like, come and make a fighting game for us. At the time, everyone needed a fighting game, you
What's
know.
that?
Dreamcast launched with Virtua Fighter 3 TB in Japan. PlayStation launched with Tekken Tag Tournament. You needed a fighting game. Sega Saturn launched with Virtua Fighter. PlayStation launched with Toshinden. You know, it was just the done thing in the 90s and early 2000s. And I'm sure a Nintendo console, but
Oh,
yes,
well.
Microsoft wanted a fighting game for the Xbox, and DOA was a perfect fit. And Itagaki, you know, only too happy to bring it over to what was the most powerful system on the market. But a game that I was surprised to learn started out on Sega hardware, and one of my favorite games was the original Ninja Gaiden. Obviously, well, when I say the original Ninja Gaiden, I don't mean the old 8-bit ones or the arcade games and NES games or
Aye.
the ports that came to Game Gear and Master System, but the game that came to Xbox actually started life as a Naomi game, which was something I was surprised to find out. It was, you know, Itagaki was set himself a goal of creating a violent adult themed action game. Started out on a Naomi with an intention to port it to the Dreamcast. Obviously, when the Dreamcast was discontinued, that all moved over to the Xbox, and you know, started in 99. It took until 2004 to come out, and oh, what a game that is! One of my favorite games that generation. And I feel like you know, you had Devil May Cry that came out, and you had the set PS2 port of Shinobi, which came out in a similar time. I think it was 2004 as well. But Ninja Gaiden was just so brilliant. Just looks absolutely gorgeous even today. Looks absolutely stunning. Absolutely brutally hard. When I was playing it earlier, I got both versions. So I've got Ninja Gaiden, which is this is my original copy that I've got here, that I've had for, you know, since I got this on release. And then a friend gave me Ninja Gaiden Black, but I've only got the box for that. I've only got the disc for that. I thought I'd put Ninja Gaiden Black in, thinking I'd get some easy gameplay in. Realized I put the original in. Still managed to get to the second stage without too much fuss, but when I first started playing it, mate, I literally couldn't get past I couldn't even get to the first boss. Like, I don't know, have you played it much at all, or is it one that passed you by?
When you held that case up, I remember buying it and I didn't touch it because it was too hard. It was the most frustrating game ever. It's like I was expecting just a nice kind of ninja hack and slash run about, and that's part of what you do, but bloody hell, man, it's difficult. It's one I might have to kind of go back and again, it's we'll add it to the list, the ever-growing list of games that I need to play. It's like we're sitting in a retirement home at this rate, like, right, pass me Dead or Alive 5, pass me Ninja Gaiden. I'll play them eventually, but no, I did buy the first one and I get put off by how hard it was. I've no get time to play this. Can you play the other stuff? This is too hard. So, ashamedly, the Ninja Gaiden games are ones that I have very, very like. I could sit here and wax lyrical for hours about Dead or Alive, you know, one, especially 1, 2, and 3. But Ninja Gaiden, mate, I'm afraid it's over to you for that.
All right. Well, did you get stuck on? Because obviously you start off, and I did this so many times, mate. It's ingrained in my head. I start off, and you know, you get the little kunai hits with the hints on, and you run up, you climb up, run up, wall, run up the walls, you swing on the branch, then you fight the two initial ninjas that come down, then you swing on the branch, go over the pit, you go around the corner, you fight two more ninjas, then you do the wall jump up the narrow thing, you get into, you fight two more, and then you go into the kind of the temple dojo, whatever, and then you're in the room, and then the brown, the ninjas in the brown gi keep spawning over and over, and I tell you what, I could not can't get past that bit for, it felt like for days, and then you get into the net, you get into the next room, and then you get the white ninjas, and they throw shurikens at you, and I was just like, this is impossible. This is impossible. It's
I remember being,
and.
in the room, mate. Aye,
And imagine
that was
that's probably
far.
where you might be the one that pushed you over, or might have pushed a lot of people over. But yeah,
Aye,
is that ring any bells?
that rings bells, mate. I can see the room. I can see the wee brown ninja guys. I can also see me turning the Xbox off and discussing putting DOA3 back on.
I persisted with it. I got up to, I got up to the third stage, and I thought, how many stages can this have? Thought we have like about five or six. Ended up having 18. I did finally beat it, albeit I beat the version of the Master Collection when the Master Collection came out, which it's a port of Ninja Gaiden Sigma, so it's not quite the same. Not the same. Yeah, I going back to it today, I was surprised how much more accustomed to it I've been, because I've since beat Ninja Gaiden 2 Black again, and then went back to the original Ninja Gaiden 2, which is better, but we'll get onto that in due course. But it's an absolutely phenomenal game, very rewarding. You kind of just have to learn how to play it. And but it took me, what if I did beat it last year? Last year was 2024, so it took me 20 years to actually see the end of it.
Bloody hell.
But it goes, it's the legendary story, isn't it, mate? That he apparently took it to his playtesters, and they said to him, "No, it's too hard." And what was his answer?
Go on.
He made it harder. That just sums him up, doesn't he? I think it's the famous quote, isn't it? Now, it might be that it's kind of, it's just him, drumming up, just being, a little bit different, a little bit kind of, I don't know, but trying to drum up interest in it. But the idea of the playtester saying, "No, it's too difficult," and him going, "Well, I'm going to make the game harder then." Just brilliant story.
Would sum up though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Managed.
Apologize to viewers who see me yawning. This is the impact of a toddler, right? Going to sleep at 1 o'clock in the morning. It's bags. It's just, well, that guy's sitting there yawning because we're recording this and it's currently 10 past midnight. It's now the 1st of November.
Oh, there we go. Happy first of the month. But yeah, Ninja Gaiden, mate. As far as I'm concerned, one of the best games of that generation. I preferred that to that Devil May Cry. Even today, I'm probably going to try and finish it now. Playing through it just now, it's absolutely phenomenal game. But yeah, I mean, he had a lot of plate spinning at the time. Obviously, DOA 3, Ninja Gaiden, and another one which I haven't played much of, but I think you had a few things to say about it. But the Dead or Alive girls were present in another game, Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball. Now, I don't know too much about this one. The idea of
It's a
as a
phenomenal
teenager.
multiplayer game, mate. I will not be slandered
Okay. Yeah, I
by
mean,
being a dirty pervert.
one thing I forgot to talk about was the fact that when remember when that issue of Sega Saturn magazine came out with Kasumi on the cover on the beach in a bikini, and I was reading that. Obviously, I was reading the Dreamcast and Saturn information with him, but at the
Clearly.
time I was on holiday with the family, and my uncle came with us. Obviously, my brother and sister were younger, and they were in my room. My mum and dad were in another room, and I was in the room with my uncle. Obviously, I'm reading this magazine before I go to bed, and I put it on the side. And as I put it down, my uncle comes down. It's in the twin. He leans over. He's like, grabs it. He's like, He's like, oh, I thought this was a tug mag.
Oh, what a line, man.
I know. It cracks me up thinking about it. But yeah, it's obviously very pretty ladies in the Dead or Alive games. And I think that was the premise of beach volleyball, which I appreciate, but I didn't want to pay out for it at the time. But did you play it? And obviously, as you said, it's an outstanding multiplayer game.
A great laugh, mate. I mean, the physics are, great for on the ball. It plays well. It's a great. I'm trying, mate. I'm trying.
Because don't you
Oh,
kind of but get them gifts and stuff or dress them up and things?
it's don't get me wrong, mate. Again, it was at that time in my life where I was working, I had no responsibilities. I paid my mum 150 quid a month, big money, and the rest was mine. And all I did was just basically buy video games and consoles. And I bought DOA Beach Volleyball at the same time as another game. The main reason that I went into GeForce during my lunch break, and I can still remember the looks I got going back to the office, because I bought Steel Battalion and DOA
Oh, okay.
Beach Volleyball
Jesus
launched the
Christ.
same day.
Like 200 quid of Xbox games.
Just on a whim, mate. What, you know what I mean? What a time. What a
Yeah.
time to be alive that was. Just walking in. And it was just I need GeForce for my lunch break. It's like, what's new? Well, I've got this Steel Battalion. What's that? Also a big controller that's in a big army crate cardboard box thing. I'm like, much. 139.99, I think it was. All
Bloody hell.
right. And what else is it? Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball, mate. What? I'll take a copy of that as well, thank you. And I remember getting back and setting up Steel Battalion. Jesus Christ, man. I had to get a table for the kitchen. Like, with these like kind of like wee tables we had for dinner that you would set up if you were going to sit at in the living room while watching TV. And they were kind of long and narrow. Flipped them up. I was like, oh, okay. It was still too small. Like, I remember my mum walking in because like, the setup for like Steel Battalion is like, even to turn the mech on, it's like, dum, 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 dum. Turn the key, flick them, flip that, lights come on, flashes, window opens, this tiny wee window opens on the screen, like, and like the boom, oh here we go, and then you move that stick to walk, and it's boom, boom, slowest. I'm like, just go faster. I thought this was going to be like Gundam. It's like, what is that shite? It's an awful game, Steel Battalion. Controller's a gimmick, and I didn't get much play. I traded that in pretty quick. But I did live beach volleyball. A couple of games with mates, we had a laugh on it. I wasn't getting into spending money on outfits and stuff like that. Looking kind of back now, when you see the kind of games that are out, it's a wee bit kind of too much like Barbie's Dream House on the iPad. You know, buy packs of clothes and shit like that. No. But, as a sports game, I mean, it wasn't bad. I mean, the volleyball aspect of it was fun. You could have some good fun with mates playing it, And obviously, she's going. It's like kind of the usual shitty immature banter at a time. But see, as a volleyball game, it worked well.
There weren't too many of them either.
No, exactly. So it was different. It took the characters for a more violent setting and put them into their pastime. What do the DOA girls get up to when they're not beating the shit out of each other? They play volleyball. So, but that's why I bought it, mate. It was just that time where I was buying pretty much every new release that came out just because. And I got it at the same time as Steel Battalion. So
Yeah,
there you
fair
go.
enough, mate. And there was like three of them in the end, wasn't there? I think there's three of those
Only
DOA Extreme Volleyball games, so they ended up being quite popular. I don't actually
bought the
have
first
one.
one.
Yeah. But obviously from there it was onto the 360. So a couple of games that came to the 360. DOA 4 and the final game that Itagaki made for the 360 was Ninja Gaiden 2.
DOA
DOA
four,
four.
Is that?
DOA four, man. Again, phenomenal.
And it's got the is it Nicole, the Spartan?
What's that, mate?
Got the Spartan. Yeah, is it Nicole?
Oh, aye. The environments though on DOA four are just again next level. Like something like even more destructible items. Like there's the stages when I kinda it looks like it's a sort of kind of Mediterranean kind of ocean side kind of wee market, and it's like kind of wee cobbled street, but it's going at an angle and there's like kind of wee kind of like grey brick kind of archways going over it. And there's like the stalls with the fruit. You can just basically smack somebody and this stall just goes flying, man. It's just like the level of immersion was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's do you know what? You look at games today, you look at games like Tekken 7 or Tekken 8, not played Tekken 8, and the character models in Tekken 8 are, you know, detailed. And there's Mortal Kombat 1 as well, which is obviously 2D, but you just don't get anything, you know, the vision, you know. The only thing that seems to be moving in that direction is the new Virtua Fighter. You know, when they're in this, you know, when you see their clip in the market where, you know, Acura is fighting, they don't call it weird. It's Sarah, isn't it? They're calling it something else, but the link between worlds. But, you know, they're in that market store when all the fruit and veg are knocking off and everything like that. But that's it's that level of detail. You know, we had this what nearly 20 years ago on the 360. Absolutely insane looking game for the time. You know, and when you're looking at stuff like, what was the alternative? You know, I don't think you had anything quite that level. PS3, I don't think was out yet at that time, was it? Wasn't DOA 4 a launch game?
No.
On the 360? Or did it
no,
come later?
No, because it came back later because I'd have got it because my launch games, what's my launch games for 360 I picked up? Perfect Dark, PGR3. Was it Cameo I picked up? Was that my three? Pretty sure it was not. If DOA 4 had been a launch title, mate, I'd have been all over it. I'd have been in the bag first that night at the midnight launch. But no, ice. There was nothing, again, nothing that looked that good fighting game wise anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and even to an extent, as you said, mate, there's not been much to kind of stand up to. I mean, even you look at like VF5 Revo, you know, yeah, another reskin of VF5. It's great to have it on Xbox and we'll. I picked it up yesterday when it came out, and it'll be great to put it through its paces and get some games online. You can kick my ass online, mate. Again, did it on Ultimate Showdown, so nobody, I doubt there's going to be any different outcome. I mean, it is as great as it looks, you know, and environments are sharper and they're more detailed. They're still not quite, I mean, there's like deformation and kind of snow and sand and stuff like that, but there's never really been that kind of level of, you know, background destruction of kind of depth.
Yeah.
And the stuff we've seen, the kind of the tech demos of like VF, and it looks like it's two Akiras fighting each other. And it's this kind of just like stalls, and it looks like kind of quite kind of murky, like kind of like dusty, dirty kind of market area. Kind of, and there's various bits and bobs in the background. And it looks like, you know, you can smack people through elements in the backgrounds, certainly hints at that anyway for the trailers, but and there's been nothing that's got that kind of, look, beat 'em ups had a period where they went from being on kind of static restrictive planes. You know, you had like your Street Fighter 2 and your Mortal Kombat and then like Virtua Fighter, even like VF2, and then with like Power Stone, it kind of tried to explore the isometric view of the battle arena to let you go and it. You know, rather than looking at side on, it was kind of tilted up and you could go anywhere. And then obviously DOA, you know, with 3 and 4, we're trying to add that, especially we're trying to add that kind of more immersive aspect to the backgrounds that they weren't just pretty pictures that the fighters were set against. They had meaning,
yeah.
You know, they had elements of them. If you smash someone through it, they can hurt. They can take damage off you. Whereas I feel like since that, it started regressing back to them just being pretty pictures in the backgrounds. You know, there's not been a kind of evolution of what Agaki did with the environments. Like, especially with the tech we've got now, there's no excuse. 360 was doing this. There's no reason why. You think about like on like Xbox One, like Killer Instinct looks great, but shallow gameplay wise. But the backgrounds don't do shit.
No.
You know, it's, so hopefully Virtua Fighter, you know, the new Virtua Fighter does lean into that, you know, and makes the environments more than just a backdrop.
Yeah. It's always the, I don't know how well they are kind of received in the fighting game community. I mean, but when they're talking about kind of playing them at a professional level, they want to keep it kind of consistent, and usually that sort of stuff isn't as well received. Kind of like, so like, you know, Virtua Fighter 3 TB tried it, and Virtua Fighter 3 TB is still kind of well thought of, and Tekken 4 obviously had to copy it and didn't do it as well, and then it was taken out of Tekken 4. But the Tekken since will kind of have you fighting through environments, but they're basically just walls with some window dressing. There's not much interactivity in there. It'd be nice to have a game that actually does lean into the kind of the environmental detail, you know, actually fighting in the street. Games like Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter are just, you know, as you say, mate, flat backgrounds. Although Mortal Kombat, you're able to press like the RB button in the recent ones and grab a spear out of the background and throw it at people and stuff. And that's about as much as you get. But yeah, it's again, it's a stunning looking game. Obviously against some big competition when Virtua Fighter 5 appeared, but even then, Virtua Fighter 5 probably had better looking character models, but didn't have quite the same detail when it came to the environment, so it was a bit of a trade-off. But it was Dead or Alive 4, and then a few years later, it was the final game that Itagaki would have released, which was Ninja Gaiden 2, which is definitely a personal favourite of mine. Absolutely adored that. Unlike the first Ninja Gaiden, which I kept trying and failing to get anywhere on. Eventually, you know, that one, it took me about a year to get to the third stage. Ninja Gaiden 2, I managed to play all the way through that over the course of like a month or so. And just, wow, just that game. It's just so over the top, so violent. An absolute masterpiece of that game design, as far as I'm concerned. And especially when you get all the weapons, and you level all your different weapons up, and you get all your different skills and stuff, and then you've got all the dismemberment, the decapitations, and all that sort of stuff, chopping limbs off. Just a sheer badass game. And yeah, I played Black last year, Ninja Gaiden 2 Black, when that came to Game Pass, which was fun to revisit it, but I could tell that it wasn't quite the same game. They actually kind of, they tried to give you as many enemies and on screen as much compared to Sigma, which really dialed it down and dialed down the violence. It's tried to restore it a lot, but it's still not quite Ninja Gaiden 2, the original 360 version. Amusingly, the frame rate does drop a fair bit on there when it gets really busy, when you've got like about 20 or 30 ninjas all running down the stairs. It's the stairs where the frame rate absolutely tanks, and you're like fighting them off, and you're doing your ultimate ninja attack, holding down the Y button, and then he's doing all these, and then the frame rate is chugging. But it's like, sometimes you just got to let that frame rate go. Because, yeah, you see it, it kind of turn into a slideshow. But what a slideshow when you're seeing all these limbs and heads all being lopped off. And
sounds like a scene for Kill Bill, mate. It's like...
It's a very cinematic game. It's completely bonkers as well. Got like the various, like, you get you're fighting the various fiends summoned by the arch fiend, and they're all just mental. You're fighting this gigantic werewolf thing in a coliseum where they're full of werewolves and they're just eating people, and he's going, "Bring me a worthy challenger," and he's got like four arms. It's just pure. I don't know. It's and obviously you've got like the female character as well. It's like, If you wanted to take 90s gaming and wrap all that toxic masculinity up in a game, that's what it is. It's a pure brutal game. In a good way. It's not in a toxic way, but it's just pure adrenaline. Absolutely insane game. Sadly, the last game that Itakaki would make for Tecmo obviously was kind of mired in a bit of controversy at the end. I think he was cleared of any wrongdoing, wasn't he? But then kind
Yeah,
of
it was
left him.
2006. It was a former Tecmo employee filed a sexual harassment suit against him, claiming that Itagaki had made several unwanted advances, and Tecmo had a investigation against him. Conclusion was that the allegations in question were the result of the former employee's desire to vent frustration over her own personal affair and not indicative of sexual harassment. However, Tecmo demoted Itagaki and the accuser for their mingling of personal affairs with their corporate responsibilities. That's a quote. But in June 2007, a Tokyo District Court found Itagaki innocent of all charges. However, it was kind of bad blood that kind of rumbled on. It never really went away. June 2, 2008, just before the release of Ninja Gaiden 2, Itagaki released a statement to say that he would be resigning from Tecmo, and he was suing the company for 148 million yen or $1.4 million at the time for withholding a bonus promised for his previous work. He also sued Tecmo's president, Yoshima Yasuda, for damages based on unreasonable and disingenuous statements made in front of Itagaki's colleagues. So, it all kind of went a wee bit kind of pear-shaped towards the end. It's a shame, to see that the company that, he'd saved kind of, in the end turned against him, and sort of forced him at the door. I mean, obviously, the allegations were made. He was cleared of any wrongdoing, but it seems that, as president Yoshima Yasuda kind of decided they would still make, damaging comments in front of Itagaki and his colleagues. So he quit just before the release of Ninja Gaiden 2.
Which is a real shame, because post Ninja Gaiden 2, obviously neither side was really quite the same. Itagaki had kind of Devil's Third on the Wii U, which is kind of infamous. Whereas, I've been, Dead or Alive and Ninja Gaiden have rumbled on. DOA 5 and 6 are kind of missing. They're missing that freedom of expression in the way that you fight that the previous games have, and you can tell that they're not involved in there. Ninja Gaiden 4 at the time of recording has literally just come out on Game Pass, one that I'm quite keen to play. I was quite keen to play, and I've been playing it, but it is very much not a Ninja Gaiden. I don't think it's a Ninja Gaiden game. I'll just flat out say it right now. It does feel like a Platinum Games game. So it feels like Nier Automata or Transformers Devastation, which is to say it's a good fighting game. It's a good brawling action game, but it's not a Ninja Gaiden game. It just feels a little bit too easy. And because the plot of that one follows on from the third game, which I never played, because once I heard that he wasn't involved in the third game, I was kind of not really interested. I thought, I'll try the third game out. And the third game, you can just tell straight away, it just plays so differently. It tries to start off. We start off in London in the third game. It's all cinematic and stuff, but it doesn't quite. It feels like it's trying hard and failing to do what it was that Itagaki did so effortlessly when he set up his games. The fact that he wasn't able to continue his life's work and his legacy at Tecmo, it's a real shame. But mate, I think what a legacy he's left behind with those games. And of course, we can't talk about him without talking about his feud with Harada as well.
The man behind Tekken, Although there was, Harada's final message was extremely poignant, to see the comments that he made, about them always planning to sit down and kind of talk and never quite getting around to it. It's always wonder what could have been, could we have had a Dead or Alive and Tekken crossover, could the hatchet have been buried, could the rivalry have been put aside to give us that? But what you were saying there, mate, as well, there's a dog strike getting in the picture here. It's What was I saying there? What was I talking about? Doug, you've put me off, Doug. You know, what am I doing and go to your bed? It's the fact that he never got to continue, and you're talking about how you never played Ninja Gaiden 3 because you heard that Agaki wasn't involved. It's like he was so intrinsic to those games. Like, his soul was put into them. He imprinted on those games so much that if you take that out, it's in a way, it's the worry I've got about the new Virtua Fighter. Like, I know Yu Suzuki's apparently on there as an advisor, you know, allegedly, but he's not working on it. And it's like, will it still have that yeah. feel, you know? And that's the worry, and that's why the Dead or Alive games up to, you know, DOA 4. That's why Ninja Gaiden 1 and 2 have got the feel that they've got, is because of him. And, you know, as I say, it's for Tecmo to even try and carry on. It's remarkable arrogance, actually, to think that you could just, you know, the guy, you're scunning the guy out the door and you're just going to try and continue his magic without him. It's just, it was never going to work. It was never going to work. These guys are geniuses. You know, it's what they do is put a little bit of them, they leave a little bit of them behind in each game that they make. And without that, they just don't have it. They don't have that special something, that little spark that makes them what they are. So yeah. I'm not surprised to hear you never played 3, mate.
Yeah, yeah, I've started playing it now. I mean, I don't think it's great. It's a short game. I'll probably see it through just for the sake of being it. But it's definitely easier than the other ones. It's definitely kind of switch your brain off and smash buttons. And 4 feels a bit like that as well, especially because 4 does the old trick with the yellow paint to tell you where you have to go, which I think is awful. sorry. I think the game started doing it now. I think Resident Evil started doing it, color it, throwing paint on ladders and stuff to say, oh yeah, this is where you need to go, which is like, you know, back in the day, I used to flail around and try and figure it out. And it's just like, I don't know. Sometimes, mate, yeah, it's just one of those, another one of those things, mate, where modern games just feels like they're not for me. if it wasn't for Game Pass, I really wouldn't be playing half of them.
That's the thing, mate. I mean, it's like we're all waiting for this new Virtua Fighter, as I said, but there's every chance that I'll probably still play VF2 on Saturn and VF3 TB on Dreamcast more. It's just,
yeah.
You know, they're just rooted in that era. They're just special because of the hardware they're on and obviously who made them.
Yeah. But I do think, you know, for what Itagaki did, yeah, you know, Dead or Alive was obviously heavily influenced by Virtua Fighter. But, you know, obviously he had his feud with Harada. He had his, you know, I think he was 5 years senior in school or something. And then he started calling Harada kind of the diminutive kind of Japanese, you know, calling him Chan and stuff and kind of belittling him and saying that Tekken was awful. I mean, Harada didn't make the first two Tekkens. He only got involved in the third one, I think, was when he really took charge of it. Whereas, obviously, Itagaki created the Dead or Alive games, created an entire fighting game franchise, which really does need credit for. But, yeah, it's they made it up in the end. And as you say, mate, it's quite poignant. Harada, you know, talking about how they never got to go for that drink in the end. But, yeah, an incredible legacy to leave behind. And yeah, it's if people want to play those games and 100% play the Dreamcast and Xbox ones, not so much. Don't play the Sigma games because he wasn't involved in the Sigma Ninja Gaiden games. The PS ports of 1 and 2 are the worst place to play those games, of Dead or Alive 1 and 2. So yeah, it's all about staying on Sega. And I think the, you know, obviously we're the Sega guys, mate, and it's always a focus on Sega games and Sega hardware. And I think there are dotted lines, you know, people talk about the Xbox being the Dreamcast 2, the successor to the Dreamcast. And there is that. But I do think there are parallels with what Itagaki did, because I think DOA has that, it kind of runs in parallel to Virtua Fighter. And to an extent, Ninja Gaiden is probably the closest thing we get to a different kind of shinobi game in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, first original 2D game came out around the same time as the original shinobi, you know. The 3D games came out around the same time, so it's kind of always running parallel to it. Obviously, there's a lot of similarities to it, and a ninja rock hard difficulty. Quite funny that Art of Vengeance came out the same time as the new Ninja Gaiden Ragebound. So yeah, I think there are parallels in what Itokage did, and kind of a Sega connection as well. So I think there's that as well.
Aye, that is. It's just it's crazy to see, just how that, as you say, mate, they're all, in parallel. But the fact that, Itagaki, he was a fan of Sega's and Sega games, and then to actually leverage their hardware for his own, it's like he would, wasn't he going to get the hardware to do it anywhere else? At that time, Sega were cutting edge, and he basically leveraged not just the arcade hardware but the home hardware as well. And we spoke about it kind of briefly. The Saturn Porter DOA is phenomenal, like absolutely phenomenal. One of the best arcade ports. Like it's, as I said earlier, backgrounds wise, it surpasses VF2. It gives Last Bronx a run for its money. It pisses on Fighting Vipers and Fighters Mega Mix visually, but it's just a damn good game to play. The controls are so responsive. The hold and counter system is so intuitive. It's just to use that hardware and take Sega's kind of blueprint and go a completely different direction. And they do things that, I mean, Yu Suzuki might have looked at what Gaki was doing and go, bastard, did I not think of that? Because I can only imagine Yu Suzuki, he's like, ring outs. And Gaki's like, no, danger zones, explosives. It's like, oh Jesus, multi-tiered. Like again, you look VF3 TV, TV. We've got undulating stages. Well, I'm just going to knock somebody off a cliff and then jump after them and keep fighting. It's just everything. Like VF was obviously rooted as much in realism as possible, apart for the floaty jumps, ridiculous jumping, which people always laugh at. But DOA wasn't afraid to engage in a bit of the
Go out
theatrical,
there, yeah.
to basically make its point, and it was all, to its benefit. Phenomenal fighting games. Like I just want to go and play three right now, by the way. I know it's about two, but I'm just got a pure buzz to play three. Just I'm gonna put the OG Xbox on after we finish, then I'll wait the whole house up with nine lives blaring. Right, amazing.
Amazing stuff, mate. Yeah, well, as I said, what a legacy. So yeah, I think we'll bring it to a close there. So we'd love to know what our viewers and listeners think about Tomonobu Itagaki, the legend, the rock star game developer, larger than life personality, outspoken, just a pure legend in every sense, which leaves behind a real legacy of games that pushed the envelope, had such great appeal, and were just terrific pieces of software that resurrected Tecmo, kept them alive until they merged with Koei, and just really left their mark and are still beloved and have a legacy today. Ninja Gaiden, with a new game that's just come out, is purely down to what Itagaki did. So fantastic. So let us know what you think in the comments below, and get in touch via the Sega Guys Discord. If you've enjoyed the content, give us a like and a subscribe if you're on YouTube. And if you want to be extra mega, why not become a member with a bunch of awesome perks from as little as 99p, with our Akira All Access members getting their names read out as a big thank you right now.
Certainly, our Akira All Access members for today's show, we have G-Man, we have Stiff Peaks, Mikowski, Craig Williamson, Resident SD, P-Wall, Peter007, Andy Mackey, Nick Tullock, Greg Matthews, Tom Fum, Kaiju Leviathan, Nelson Serino, and David Owens. So thank you very much to all our members and subscribers for your continued support. If a monthly membership isn't your thing, that is no problem at all. We appreciate you spending your time with us, giving us your ears and your eyes if you're watching, and just kind of engaging in the comments, sharing it with your friends, letting people know about the channel. All that good stuff is appreciated. And last night we did pass 15,000 subscribers, so it's madness, mate. Why start a podcast?
Yes,
You know, the
absolutely
infamous
insane.
words. So,
Yeah.
no, thank you very much, everyone.
Yeah, just to echo that, amazing to hit that milestone. So thank you to everyone. So it's been a pleasure once again, James, talking about games, but specifically talking about this legendary developer who's touched us both in, you know, fantastic ways with the games that he's developed. So thanks again, and until next time, we will see you on the Sega side.
Sega.